Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Bleeding on the Page. This is your host Sam with my co-host Max.
You alright?
Today is a very special episode because we have with us, via the phone lines, Trey the Explainer.
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on to our podcast to educate us and inform us and expand our minds a bit, Trey. We're really happy and thankful that you're on this podcast. You're the first phone guest we've ever had in, so we've been really excited about this.
Oh wow! Oh, thank you so much. I'm very honored. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, if anyone's not familiar with Trey's work, he is a YouTuber.
He's actually the YouTuber that started all of this weird, obsession. A couple of episodes ago, I mentioned that I've been watching dinosaur videos about dinosaur illustrations, and they were Trey the Explainer's videos that I was watching. But yeah, for the people that don't know, Trey's like a very prolific YouTuber who makes videos about dinosaurs and paleontology in general. He's very informative, really interesting. If you haven't checked out his stuff, you should definitely go over to his channel and check him out either after this podcast or maybe even before. He's a good guy.
So Trey, when I first invited you onto the show, you said you hadn't spoken about dinosaurs or you hadn't done a dinosaur video for 3 years.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've actually talked about dinosaurs. I've gone off tangents on like archaeology stuff or anthropology stuff, and I need to get back to. I think my next video will be about dinosaurs.
Oh, which is good. Amazing!
The fans are angry. They're like rioting.
Because yeah, that's what I found so interesting when I sort of started finding your videos, how much I didn't really understand how paleontology was actually had such a vibrant community to it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the internet's done in terms of done for the paleontological community?
Oh, for one thing, it's definitely made like the information way easier to access. Mm. Just reading, like, the fact that there's so many, like, scientific papers, like, open for the public and it's free for you to read is just a really great thing. And it's, like, you probably wouldn't get that in, like, the library or whatever they had beforehand.
Yeah, however those idiots used to live before.
Those dinosaur neeks who didn't have the internet at their hands to be dinosaur experts.
It makes it really easy to contact the actual paleontologists. Like, it's really cool because I get to email like Mark Witten and Darren Niche and all them.
I assume and just, like, they're ask big them, like, names questions. In paleontology.
Yeah. Are these paleontological bigwigs? Yeah.
They're the bigwigs. Yeah, no.
The big Cajoncho burgers.
they're kind of like the dinosaur experts. Some of them are like artists.
Would
too.
You say they're like what David Bowie is to music, they are to paleontology sort of thing?
I'm trying to think of an like musician.
You know what? Yeah, what sort
they're
of
Mick Jaggers?
They're the Mick Jaggers of the Mick Jaggers of dinosaurs. Sick.
So what? Well, for us, why we got into this rabbit hole is because we write scripts, me and Max, and the next script we were thinking of writing was about a paleontologist. Well, I mean, would you describe yourself as a paleontologist?
Yeah. I wouldn't. See, the thing is, I don't want to call myself a paleontologist because I don't have a degree or anything in paleontology. I've been to sites and excavated, but like as like
wow.
an undergraduate.
Did you find any bones?
Oh, yeah, we found some bones. We found some,
sick.
What did we find? It's in, Utah. It was a while ago. I think we found some, like, theropod footprints.
Oh, that's tight, man. Theropod.
Yeah.
Theropod. I know what a theropod is because of your videos.
Thank you.
So is there a word? Is there like a word for sort of more of an untrained paleontologist, for lack of a better term?
I don't know. More like I know what is the term in the paleontology community that it was like, there's like all these stupid paleontology terms exclusive to the community.
Oh, really? Like in the way that like people categorize themselves politically in really weird ways, like anarcho, like eco anarchists and stuff like that. Do you have labelings for the paleontologists that way? What's the most like obscure paleontological labeling that's out there?
I love using paleo artist, and it's just a person that draws art of like dinosaurs and prehistoric stuff.
I feel like there'd be something really alluring about like a really attractive like paleo artist.
Yeah,
like, yeah, yeah. I just draw dinosaurs. Yeah, and, like flowing hair, maybe.
Yeah, because I was interested in because we were watching your video about whether dinosaurs had feathers. And you were crediting a lot of people who contributed. But what I found fascinating was that mostly their links were to deviant arts. So it seems that paleontology and art seem to go really hand in hand.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that like a lot of paleontologists have a very like strong relationship with like the artists who make like illustrations for like the papers. Like who's the famous one? Joshua, I'm gonna butcher his last name because it's like, it's German or Scandinavian or something like that. Kaput, something like that. He's on DeviantArt. He's made it really big. Where like almost every other paper I see, like it has like an illustration from him.
Yeah, and so with that, there comes an interesting question of what is the right way or the most scientifically accurate way to interpret fossils or bones or footprints or anything left behind.
Because so often with these paleontological like images that we see in your videos and all around the web now, especially in recent days, there seems to be a really strong artistic sort of confidence in it. It's like artists are actually being very sort of creative with how they're drawing these dinosaurs and illustrating them. What do you think, how good is the line, do you think, between the actual representation of the dinosaurs and what the drawings are representing in today's kind of art world?
That's a really good question. Paleontology, like the depicting prehistoric animals, can like there's a lot of wiggle room with it, and that's what like a lot of paleo artists like toy with, is there's a lot of animals, all we have is like bits of the skeleton, and you don't really know what the soft tissue, like the skin covering, or especially with dinosaurs, like the skin coverings of dinosaurs is very much debated. Some dinosaurs might have feathers, some might have had scales. There's just a lot of gray area. And so essentially what a paleo artist can do is like, depending from species to species, they can essentially just go all over the place. They can give it like a lot of fatty tissue or
artistic license, if you like.
Yeah, a lot of artistic license. They can give it like a head crest if there's enough sort of vagary in there for it. I'm making up words. And like what a lot of paleo artists use is they use a lot of surviving animals. So you look at the closest living relatives. For a lot of dinosaurs, it's birds, and they see like what do birds have that a dinosaur might have. Like a lot of paleo artists play with like vulture skin flaps and stuff,
skin flaps.
Unique head crests and all that.
Do you think, it ever get to a point where it's too rampant and you're like, actually, these paleo artists are too keen on skin flaps and head crests? And it's restricting
them.
Yeah,
no, that's very true, where like people, they're following the modern species way too closely, or they're just being way too creative, like especially with colors in dinosaurs. Like odds are they would be very drab, like a lot of mammals and stuff, big mammals, because you have to blend into your environment and all
right
that.
So like, you'll see, let's spunk it up a bit, let's make it look a little bit more exciting,
let's give it a slap,
let's give it some racing stripes, let's give them some horns. You could be scientifically in right to even do that, because there's those gray areas you were talking about, because we have all that bones. Has anyone ever taken the bones of an animal and repurposed how the bones are put together to make a completely separate creature?
There's been incidents in paleontology where there have been mix-ups where, like, the famous one is, like, Tanystrophius, or it might have been a plesiosaur, one of those long-necked marine reptiles, where, like, they put the bones on the complete wrong side of the animal and gave it a really long tail, like a really long tail, and in actuality it was the neck. So, like, so there's been a lot of screw-ups.
So they have a tiny neck in their original illustrations and a really long tail.
How long have people, like, had, like, perceptions on that? What's the longest, like, wrong perception of a dinosaur that's existed? Like, how long, like, have we been, like, really wrong about how dinosaurs have looked for very long periods of time?
Oh, yeah.
I love that.
The lizard dinosaurs that you see, like, in, like, anything essentially older than Jurassic Park, maybe. Anything older than Jurassic Park, odds are it's going to be, like, an iguana. like just straight up an iguana, which, like, something, the big period. This is another one of those dumb paleontology exclusive terms that's called the dinosaur renaissance.
Mm. Oh, I like that.
It happened around the 60s, 70s, where paleontologists were finally figuring out that, like, dinosaurs were not just big lizards, but they were, like, essentially just big birds.
It's like people were just like, oh, we totally got this wrong. That must reframe, like, everything, though. That, like, lizards and birds are so very far from each other.
It's almost
way,
like, they have to start from scratch once they come to that realization.
The biggest revolution in dinosaur paleontology has to be when they figured out that, like, not all dinosaurs were cold-blooded, so it completely changed, like, probably what their behavior had been perceived as for, like, decades.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even know there were dinosaurs. What does that mean for dinosaurs if there's some that are if there's some that aren't cold-blooded?
It would mean that they'd be way more active and be able to survive in, like, colder climates. And like, the thing is with a lot of sort of depictions during, like, the 1920s and stuff, they essentially made them really sluggish animals that, like, are trumpeting around, like, just like really clumsy. But with warm-blooded animals, or I think the other one where there's sort of an in-between with, like, mesotherm, where, like, they're somewhat warm-blooded and somewhat cold-blooded, they'd be able to be very, very active, almost like mammals, how active they would be. They could, like, chase after stuff and run after stuff.
Yeah, because
it completely changed the perception.
Trey, I could talk to you about dinosaurs probably for hours. You're like a fountain of information.
You are. You're a fountain of dinosaur knowledge. Did getting into paleontology as a hobby sort of ruin dinosaur movies for you? Because, like, after I found out, like, dinosaurs had feathers, and I saw, like, the dinosaur feather designs and stuff, now when I see, like, the lizard stuff, I'm like, so boring, man.
Yeah, because the feathers look way cooler. There's, like, loads more color, and it's, like, more alien. Yeah. So to us, because you do get people that are upset about the feathers, but to us, we're like, those look great. So whenever we watch something like Jurassic Park, we're like, oh.
they're just the dinosaurs boring we've had for ages. Yeah. Like, that's not even what they look like.
Right. Yeah, no, I've definitely, I will say, I wouldn't say, maybe it has ruined it for, it hasn't ruined it for me, but I know it's ruined it for people who are friends with me. Because I always am complaining about stuff. Like, what did I saw my dad after a while, and we went to see, I think it was Jurassic World or something. And, like, he was like, he essentially, like told me, like, to be quiet. Like, stop talking about dinosaurs. This is my dad.
Were you just, like, pointing out all the species and saying, that's not how they look like.
That's not it. That's not it.
The Jurassic World bothered me so much for some reason. Not bothered me too much.
Is it because you had high, because it's a new, it's like, modern,
it's a
big
modern
budget
film.
Dinosaur
it's like,
film.
We've got all the information
out now. And they've
got
all the information to do it properly.
And the thing is, like, before the movie, they made a big show of having Jack Horner. Jack Horner, he's one of those big wig paleontology guys. Mm. And they're like, oh yeah, we brought him on to look at the accuracy of the dinosaurs and all that, and make sure they're as accurate as possible. And, like, you're just like, no, you didn't.
Those bastards, like, swindling you.
Do you have a favorite dinosaur film, Trey?
Favorite dinosaur film? Have you ever watched the BBC Walking with Dinosaurs series.
Yeah, we're just checking a couple of those episodes out. They are sweet.
Oh, I love those ones. Those have to be probably, like, I would say, even though they're outdated and inaccurate now, what they really nailed was depicting dinosaurs as animals.
Oh, I see. Because
that's one of the main problems that I have with the Jurassic Park movies and essentially anything that has, like, dinosaurs in it, like in an action movie, is they have trouble depicting dinosaurs. They depict dinosaurs as, like, bloodthirsty serial killer monsters.
Mm.
Which in actuality, they were animals just like a lion or like an elephant or anything like that. Where,
right,
like,
right.
They give up on hunts. They don't mindlessly chase after stuff. They go like, oh, it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I'm going to rest or whatever. They're not like 100% attacking stuff all the time.
And what we were wondering you could help us out with, because our proposed story that we want to write is about a paleo artist who is very left field. Basically, his illustrations of dinosaurs aren't quite within the paleontology community.
He's like he'd be a bit of an oddball, you know, if he was a paleo artist.
Is there any people that are actually like that in the community, or any specific illustrations you can think of that are really crazy?
Okay, so one of the guys, so if you're looking for a guy that has been like completely,
or any sort of story,
like,
as well,
this, ostracized by like the paleontology community. Yeah. What's his name? David Peters. He is a like an amateur paleontologist, paleo artist, who is just this guy that just like he makes all these illustrations and completely has no backing for them whatsoever. and sometimes he'll just like completely get like the wrong interpretations that like the scientists have made, like completely like says that like the scientists are like lying and stuff. And he makes these really kind of strange, wow, like crazy illustrations where like pterosaurs like have like giant like they look like Mardi Gras parade floats, like almost.
Oh, sick.
Amazing.
Well, let's support David Peters.
Yeah, that sounds good. What are the most common forms of arguments? What are the common forms of debate within the paleo community that you often find? What are people getting really heated about?
A lot of people are getting heated on sort of, and this might just be me, where, like how the extent to which dinosaurs were feathered.
Is it really like just deep in the community, the divide between feathered and non-feathered?
It's not really I guess maybe it is the paleontologist, even to an extent, where like the big one that's a stink is the T-Rex, Tyrannosaurus Rex, was Tyrannosaurus Rex feathered? And like it'll be like we'll discover like a tiny patch of skin in one area of the Tyrannosaurus Rex in like the news outlets, and everybody will go like, oh, the whole thing was unfeathered, like those paleontologists were wrong to claim that it might have been feathered. So like I think that might be it, like sort of skin covering soft tissue stuff.
Great, that's good to know.
And a big part of it, yeah
because they started coming out with pictures of these giant chickens and saying that's probably what T-Rexes look like.
Yeah, the chickens.
And there isn't evidence for that. Do you still, is there proof that they had some form of feathers, but not, you know, maybe not
yeah,
the whole?
I'm of the sort of, it's probably like split like right down the middle, I'm guessing. I'm of the opinion that Tyrannosaurus Rex probably did have like some feather covering of some kind, but it was probably like light, probably like hair on like an elephant. Almost.
I see.
Where like it's just sort of sporadic and like it'd be hard to tell. And one of the big confusions has to be with like what feathers mean. Like feathers to like layman, feathers to like most people, they picture like modern bird feathers, like chicken feathers that are like these plumes. But like what paleontologists have found is that like feathers in dinosaurs had like a lot of diversity. Like there were some that were just like quills, there were some that were like almost like leaves on like a tree, almost like how they look like branches.
Cool.
A lot like we're just like really tiny. There was a lot of variation in like dinosaur feathers.
Feathers were funkier to, like, back then.
Yeah, they
yeah, it was funkier.
Some of them were they were all sort of different kinds of feathers. And
do you feel like do you often feel like feathers should go back to their roots?
They should. Bring feathers back. And I was also wondering as well, has there ever been a case where, you know, an amateur, maybe so fairly unknown paleo artist or, you know, independent young person has changed paleontology with like one discovery or one thing or one picture?
I don't know if a single person, like a young person, has done that.
Is it because the community overall is quite large and there's so many different subsets that in order to change like loads of things, it has to be like, you know, collaborative effort?
Yeah. It's hard. It's hard for you to make a huge impact as like a paleo artist because nowadays there's just so many of them.
Our idea was to have this this crackpot lonely dinosaur paleo artist there was going to be some sort of discovery which would actually make all his illustrations accurate.
And he'd be suddenly
famed as, you know, the new Einstein of dinosaurs, and he's got all these book deals and everything. How realistic could that be? You know, what would we have to find to be able to prove that?
That's cool. No, there's definitely been paleo artists in the past that have predicted major discoveries in the past. For instance, like there was a guy, what did he call it? I'll have to look it up.
Let me know.
He was a paleo artist and sort of a paleontologist back in like the 1910s, 20s. And he made an illustration of like his speculative dinosaur. Like it was a dinosaur that he speculated might have existed. And it was sort of the transition between birds and like theropod, like round dinosaurs.
Mm. Was it just random, or did he have any kind of physical evidence? Did he just like sketch out?
He used sort of like older discoveries like Archaeopteryx and then like Compsognathus. So like those dinosaurs, and then like he was like, okay, what does an in-between those look like? And he drew a dinosaur with four wings. Like it had wings on like the front limbs and then wings on the back limbs.
Yeah.
And like people didn't really pay it much mind. And then until like it was like, when did Microraptor be discovered? It was like 1990 something. This dinosaur called Microraptor was discovered, and it was almost a visual copy of the illustration he made 100 years prior.
So our guy would have to be drawing dinosaurs that didn't exist.
And then what they do is they discover an entire new line of dinosaurs.
They find new fossils, yeah.
I think that what they have to do is like discover a different dinosaur age or a different era of dinosaurs.
A different era of dinosaurs.
Hadn't been thought of, and all his drawings are exact to them.
Yes, because Trey, there's the Jurassic era, and then there's the, what other eras are there?
For dinosaurs, it was the Triassic, the Jurassic, and then the Cretaceous.
So we got three dinosaurs.
So we got three current eras. Could there be an era before that we didn't know about? A hidden fourth era?
Hidden fourth era. I like that. There's something in. This isn't necessarily dinosaurs, but in paleontology, where there's this time period that is a bit of like a mystery.
Oh.
And it's called Romer's Gap.
Ooh. Romer's Gap.
Where essentially no fossils have been discovered of like literally anything in that space.
Ooh, I like a good mystery.
And so it's a big sort of mystery.
Sounds like a
there
title.
There weren't any dinosaurs then. It sounds like a what?
It sounds like a good title you could call it. Romer's Gap. It's like a good
Romer's
title.
Romer's Gap. I like it.
So what's known about Romer's Gap?
Was it found out by a man named Romer?
So it was sort of the period before the dinosaurs called like the Devonian. And it was sort of the transition between where like fish were crawling out onto land and sort of becoming amphibians. And the big problem with it is it sort of encompasses this period when like amphibians were fish were becoming amphibians and becoming more terrestrial, and like so like there's probably like a lot of important discoveries in there, like how did like fish sort of start becoming on land, and like what sort of roles do they play in the ecosystem that sort of drove that. So Just the problem is that like the preservation isn't good for that time period. Mm-hmm. So like there's almost nothing. Like there's one, I think there's like a few little discoveries in there, like all really weird. Like one of them is like, it was on the show Prehistoric Park. They highlighted it, and it's like this amphibian that like was like almost all body, like it only had like little tiny limbs.
Wow!
It was essentially like a big head.
This is already my favorite era of dinosaurs.
That's sort of how I feel about myself when I look in the mirror. Your whole body.
Yeah, and then like you could maybe like a lot of stuff before the dinosaurs is a bit of like a mystery.
Yeah.
And it got really weird before dinosaurs showed up.
So what's your favorite era in the past, in the land before time? What's your favorite?
Oh yeah, did you watch Land Before Time when you were a kid?
Oh yeah, yeah. Favorite prehistoric era?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to say I'm a huge fan of the overlap before like dinosaurs showed up. So there was this big sort of thing. The reason why the dinosaurs were so successful and they sort of became the rulers of the world is because there was this massive extinction that killed off like 90%, if even higher, of like all life that existed on Earth.
Why?
What, big
what
whole
was
thing.
That? Was it disease?
It was the Permian mass extinction.
Oh my God! Because that's one of the things I noticed is there's more than one extinction happened on Earth, right? There's been like multiple extinctions.
Crazy.
Which fucked me up a bit. I thought we'd only had one, so I'm a bit. It's made me a bit edgier.
No, it's scary to think that like there's been times where like almost everything on Earth's been like wiped out and extinct, and then like everything regrows from that.
So this was the era when the dinosaurs were rising on the planet. Then your favorite era.
This is the era when like the dinosaurs were these wimpy little things that like hid behind rocks, and that was the reason why they survived, is because they were just these little tiny like rat like things,
and they were able to hide away from extinction and then become
the Permian mass extinction happened, where like almost all life on Earth died out, there was this short little period where like this one species called Lystrosaurus survived. And it became like the dominant species on Earth. Never in Earth's history has like a single species taken over as much as Lystrosaurus did. Where like it represented like 95% of all like species on Earth at that time.
What did the Lystrosaurus look like?
They were like these little lizard pigs.
So are you telling me that all over the world for a period of time everything was just little lizard pigs?
They were these little dumb lizard cow pigs as far as the eye could see.
And I hate them.
Were they do we know anything about sort of what their behavior would have been like? Were they sort of violent or
we have no idea like why they survived as well as they did. It might have been just something as like dumb as like luck. Like they just were lucky.
Aww.
And how long did that period last? So how many years do we estimate that these things were the only thing on Earth for?
Probably like, I'm guessing, I don't know exactly. This is, I think it was probably like a few million years.
Oh my God.
Short time.
For millions of years, the Earth was just occupied by dopey pig lizards. That's so good.
It's so, I'm just trying to picture what like life would be on by then, because you just walk around and there'd just be these things. It would be like a Minecraft like world where it'd just be copied and pasted like a video game. You see the same character model over and over again.
We are the kings.
Hello, welcome.
Welcome to our land.
We own this planet now. Would you like to eat some grub? We're grub eaters over here.
This is my house. It's a pile of sticks. Take your shoes off
simple,
at the door.
We're simple creatures. Just trundle about.
What are the creatures called again? The species?
They're called Lystrosaurus.
Lystrosaurus.
Lystrosaurus. That's what I'm going to have to call people to insult them from now on.
You stupid Lystro.
You Lystrosaurus.
You're Lystrious, you. You're Lystrious.
Oh, mate, I've got a fucking Lystro over here. Just scraping off my boot. Thank you so much for coming on, basking us in your great, great knowledge. It was great. You're a real fountain of information and such a lovely person as well.
Oh, thank you.
You really, truly tickled my cockles.
If you guys have any more, I'd happy to come back too.
Definitely. Well, we'd love to. Actually, we should get you on the phone just to listen to the whole dinosaur.
When we write this dinosaur script, we'll get you on and you can tell us if you thought it worked or it didn't work. Yeah.
And you can be really brutal.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
That would be good. All right.
If you have the same response that you had to Jurassic World, that's okay.
Thank you so much for
us.
Having me.
No, it was a blast. Thank you so much, man. So that was Trey the Explainer. What a lovely man.
Yeah, I really liked him.
And I love that he's willing to come on again. Maybe be a friend of the podcast.
Wasn't happy with you, though.
Yeah.
I thought you really showed me up there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I sort of panicked towards the end of the way. I think we should end the interview now.
I was like, wow, he's sounding a bit insensitive.
I know. I didn't know how to end
sudden.
It.
I was going to do it for you, but then I was like, well, you know, Sam's been is in this just, now. He should take it. And then you're like, we're going to end that now. I had to be like, no, but it's been really lovely having you here, Trey. You've been great. You're a phantom of knowledge. But he was great. Well, I really liked Trey. He left a good impression on me. I'd quite like him to have been my brother growing up.
I'd like him to be my dad, if we can set up some sort of formal adoption.
Maybe we should, next time we bring on Trey, it's not him as a dinosaur expert, but more as a daddy role-play thing for you.
That would be really good. I think that would really help me get over a lot of trauma. A
lot of issues that you have with yourself.
Dad, tell me what dinosaur I'm most like.
Dad, what's the best dinosaur? What's the best dinosaur to be? Tell me more about when we were all pig men.
I want to learn more about the pig people.
I want to learn more about the pig lizard people.
I worship the pig lizard people.
I just like the idea that, there's loads of great little nuggets. Listropods or something.
I'm a listropod.
I'm
a Listrian.
It's just going to be like, there's loads of funny things there.
Just pictures of these with pig lizards everywhere. Praise be the pig lizards. Praise be the pig lizards.
We're bringing them back. But now we've got a new segment. That was the interview segment. Now we've got the new segment for you.
The interview segment.
And now we've got...
the new segment, the new item.
Netflix Corner.
We all want to sit in the corner and watch Netflix. We all do it.
Except for people who don't have corners, people without homes,
people who live in tents, giant domes, people
who live in crab carapaces.
So what's been going down in the Netflix corner?
Netflix has just been on a bit of an upsurge, putting out quite a few bits of just fully original pieces of media. This is
that
what I'm
deserve liking. To be praised.
People are complaining, like people like Martin Scorsese are people like Martin Scorsese are complaining all about like the nature
just
of cinema.
About everything, really.
Basically saying films aren't films and they're roller coasters, which is dumb because they're clearly films. I was thinking about this the other day. The reason he's bitter that they're roller coasters is because like he seems like he'd be too short to ride a roller coaster.
That's so true. He would not be allowed
be why
on.
He's so bitter, yeah.
Yeah, he's like 4 foot.
And the poor man's age. No, he's 3'10".
Legally
a midget, Scorsese is.
Scorsese. And then he says Netflix movies shouldn't be nominated.
Say that?
Probably.
The old man. But you know, I think where we are getting lots of original content is like Netflix and streaming services. Loads of things that like aren't based off anything, and there's like an upsurge.
Lots of things that feel like they wouldn't be made by any other production company other than Netflix.
Well, I think streaming services all around generally have some good things because you had Hulu, which had like Stephen King stuff. Like they do get good shit.
I'm saying that more as a compliment. It's just the Netflix films, because it's all in house. It seems like they're taking less. They're taking more risks with what they're actually making, because this film, what was it called again?
Dolomite.
Like, yeah,
so
brilliant.
Yeah, this is what we were going to talk about. Dolomite came out on Netflix not long ago, and I got really curious about it because it had Eddie Murphy in it.
He's come out of retirement.
Well, yeah, even though
Eddie, we need you to come out of retirement.
The last one he made was in 2016, but it's a bit of a change in image for him because he's going back to his youth. He's back to his crass, sweary self, which I love.
Yeah, he hasn't done that for ages.
No.
Yeah.
And it's the story of a man called Dolomite. Well, he doesn't. He's not called Dolomite.
It's a biopic.
Rudy Ray Charles. So it's just a guy called, with, I think his first name is Rudy. That's what the best I can give
wow,
you.
Wow, cool.
But he's known as the godfather of hip hop, and it's this guy who sort of started a stand up comedy routine in like America at a time and kind of basically self made himself. And Netflix made this movie, commissioned this movie about him. It was actually like really.
I love films about making films.
Yeah.
And that's what like a lot of Dolomite was.
Yeah.
And also like the casting is so great because Eddie Murphy was like a stand up comedian. So when he's going back into that sort of character, it's quite easy for him.
Yeah.
And I think that Eddie Murphy's acting is enough to like to make it really enjoyable. Yeah. He really works. But what I was saying before is that I'm not sure if Dolomite would have been a film made by like Fox or Universal and would have been put in a big cinema.
No.
Because it has quite a strange structure because barely anything bad happens. It's just really feel
it's
good.
It's hard to see a company betting on it. It's also it's also really odd. It's like Dolomite as a character, like the thing he does is not really like very broadly to be understood. I think it like requires you to have a little bit of a sense of like, I don't know, the space that he's in a little bit maybe.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. It's just a weird movie, and it's like it's kind of one of the. It's also one of those middle budget movies, right? It's not an expensive glitzy film by any means at all, and it's not really an independent kind of indie movie. It's a middle of the road. It's a middle kind of budget movie, and you don't see those being put out on cinemas at all today.
No,
And that's what's also one of the things that's nice about it is I came down. I was a bit hungover, and I saw Dolomite. I was like, I'll
stick that.
Of course,
you were hungover. You're always hungover. You've got a problem.
The more we instate this on the podcast, the more people will start
believing
it.
You're the one that brought up you were hungover.
Yeah, but it was more about setting a scene, but then you had to contextualize it against all the other times we've talked about.
You had a couple more drinks.
Well, that's the best way to cure a hangover.
There you go.
Hair of the dog. Like, what else am I expected to do? Just painkillers? No. They mix them with things. Booze.
I'm not eating those.
You don't know what they put in them.
The government put things
You don't know what they put in them, man. You don't know.
But yeah, so it was really feel good,
essentially.
And it's got a really nice, friendly, happy, lovely tone. It's a good movie. Check it out.
Yeah, I just went in. It was feel good all the way. But Eddie Murphy is particularly quite good. And I think it's one of his more standout performances that he's done for like quite a while, which was why I was happy to see it.
All right. Shall I tell you what's been in my Netflix corner?
Yeah, all right.
Little thing. Little show with Paul Rudd in it called Living With Yourself.
Oh, I love Paul Rudd. He's
he was
so
in
lovely.
Friends.
He was in Ant-Man.
Oh, Paul Rudd.
Oh, Fundamentals of Caring. Did you see that? He was so lovely in that,
and
wasn't
what makes
he?
Living With Yourself so good is there's two Paul Rudds. It's not just one, it's two.
Two Paul Rudds.
Two Paul Rudds.
There's two men who I have a crush on in my life. That's Paul Rudd and Logic. You know that. It's such a crush on Logic.
So Living With Yourself is it's kind of like a sci-fi soap opera, is how I would best describe it. It was described to me by my friend Adam, who said to me, you know that Rick and Morty episode where they go to the spa?
Yeah.
It's that. He said it's literally that. It's just that. And I was like, well, I like that episode. It was a cool concept. And it is that. It is just that. It is literally that. And that's fine. It's basically like he goes to a spa to make himself a better person, and they just make a new fresh clone who's like genetically better, and then they plan to kill the original clone, but the gas goes wrong and he doesn't die, so he just wakes up and he goes back to his house and his wife is with the clone of him who's genetically better in every way. And that causes conflict, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Imagine having a better genetic version of yourself living in your house.
I do.
With your woman.
I do. It's you. It's you. I clone myself and it's you. That's you.
That's
what you do to me, mate. That's you.
Yeah. So,
but yeah.
So you'll relate to it then?
Probably.
Yeah, you'll really relate to it.
How would you cope with that? If you had a clone of yourself who ended up...
I would immediately kill any clone of myself.
What if you're the clone?
Yeah, no, even if I am the clone.
But that's then to say that your clone will immediately try to kill you.
I know, that's why I would do it. It's self-defense more than anything.
Because you know what's happening.
Because I know,
the moment that naked body is stepping on the floor, you know what's going through his mind.
Exactly.
Because it's the same thing as what's going through your mind,
exactly.
Which is one of us has to die.
Yeah, we can't coexist. It can't happen.
Yeah, well, I do the absolute opposite of that. The exact opposite of that.
What?
The exact... Take away
you saying
life.
You would fuck yourself.
Yeah,
that's the opposite of killing.
Yeah, that's the exact opposite. I would fuck myself.
So that was in my Netflix corner. I recommend it. It was a good crack. It was funny and it had a fairly decent ending. And it was a fairly decent ending, but it became really soap opera.
Was Paul Rudd charming and sort of warming?
Yeah, he was.
Fun to be around.
Yeah, he was.
Did he have all the Paul Ruddyisms that I go to see a Paul Rudd
exactly.
film for?
No, he's really good in it.
And really good. Spades, he had two, because there's two of him.
Yeah, in Spades. He's playing two completely different characters.
Would you recommend it to someone who hates Paul Rudd?
No.
Right, well, that's
very obviously
little,
no.
Well, no, yeah, maybe.
Most but of the charm is coming from Paul Rudd, but the actor who plays his wife is also amazing. She's really good.
All right.
So cool. I would, and the writing is really smart because it keeps going back like a couple of days before, but from different characters' perspectives. Mm. So they'll show you the same scene twice, but from a different angle, and you'll see new things, which is very
Sweet.
Clever
so
to
kind
write.
Kind of like Memento.
No, nothing
what,
like
because you go back and they go back in Memento and you get to see it again.
Yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, okay. It's like Memento,
right? Just
so
like Memento.
We have a free T-shirt to give away, and yeah. after you know listening to the poems we had read yesterday, I think there's a clear winner.
We know and everyone
it,
knew.
Everyone knew from the beginning, and it goes to Tom Alexander Prideau.
Congrats.
Congrats, mate. I will email you with information.
Who came through with the shrubs.
Winning. Do you want to read it?
Yeah.
This is the winning
We're
haiku.
We're
going to
read the winning haiku once again because it's such a banger. I fucking hate shrubs. Not much else to say here. I just don't like shrubs.
Brilliant.
Thank you. Yeah, well done. Congratulations. Round of applause for him on the podcast.
Well done, Tom.
We brought in a whole crowd for you.
Maybe we can get Tom, Tom on over the phone.
Put the sounds of a crowd on here. Yeah, Tom, maybe we'll bring you in to congratulate you on the phone next episode. Who knows?
Who knows?
Anything
now
can happen
that we
in
know
this
it's
space.
Possible.
It's spontaneous. It's mental.
It's crazy.
Yeah, but maybe.
But thanks so much for listening. And thanks again to Trey the Explainer.
For coming on and being
so much smarter
much better than
us.
Both of us. Yeah. Really, really like that too, so that was good.
Catch you on the flip side.
Thanks, everyone.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.